Remember, a Hallmark card will best express your perfect taste, your thoughtfulness. The makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you a true story of British justice featuring the great British star, Charles Laughton. For more than a third of a century, quality has been a habit with the makers of Hallmark cards. You see, Hallmark cards say what you want to say. They are the kind of cards you are proud to send. That is why Hallmark cards are America's favorite greeting cards. That's why the words, a Hallmark card, on the back of the card you send, tell your friends you cared enough to send the very best. That's why you can find Hallmark cards that say what you want to say the way you want to say it. So when you want to send the very finest, be sure to look on the back for the identifying words, a Hallmark card. And now to preside over the Hallmark program this evening, here's a young man well known to Broadway both as actor and producer, Richard Kalmer.
Thanks, Tom Shirley, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The other day, I was looking through some back copies of the Reader's Digest, and I came across this pertinent and interesting item. Some years ago, at a high school ceremony, a young man read Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. Afterwards, an old gentleman came up to him and said,
"Son, I like the way you gave that speech, but you made the same mistake as everyone else. Now, I heard Mr. Lincoln at Gettysburg, so I know what I'm talking about. Everyone says, of the people, by the people, and for the people. But Mr. Lincoln said, of the people, by the people, and for the people. You see, it makes a big difference."
I like that story because Lincoln's own great sense of personal liberty is in it. The same sense of personal liberty that motivated Sir Edward Carson in the Hallmark drama you're about to hear. This is the Archer Shee case. A true story of the struggle for personal liberty that should stiffen the purpose of all those who in our day are freshly resolved that liberty shall not perish from this earth. This story could have happened only in America or England. It happened in England. The Hallmark program is proud to present Charles Laughton as Sir Edward Carson in the Archer Shee case.
Cheek, that's what it was. Cheek. Here was I, Sir Edward Carson, very busy advocate. Here was I with corporation cases, wills, government business, and pending trials on my mind. And there was that bespectacled little bank manager from Liverpool, Mr. Martin Archer Shee. There he was sitting across from me trying to interest me in the troubles of some 13-year-old schoolboy.
I know, Sir Edward. I know you're a very busy man. I know this must seem a very small affair. I know you haven't got time for it.
Don't seem to know enough to leave.
I swore that I wouldn't leave, Sir Edward, until you listened to me. I want you to know the facts before you decide whether you'll take the case or not.
I know the facts.
No, you don't. Oh, I beg your pardon, Sir Edward. But you were reading the Morning Mail when I was trying to explain the facts to you.
And you think that Sir Edward Carson cannot give his attention to two things at once?
No, I shouldn't expect that, even of you, Sir Edward.
Then I'll prove that you're wrong, sir. I'll recite the facts to you, and then I'll ask you to leave. The facts are, this boy, whose name is, yours.
My son.
Naturally, your son is. Facts are that he was found with some money on him.
No.
Just about to send a postal order to, well, it doesn't matter to whom. And since the money belonged to someone else, who did the money belong to? He was naturally expelled from, the name of the school escapes me.
You've got it all wrong, sir.
I remind you that you are speaking to Sir Edward Carson, who gets nothing wrong.
Sir Edward, please. My son was not found with any money on him. He did not steal, and the postal money order has nothing to do with it.
It's enough, sir. I cannot take the case. I'm very sorry.
Sir Edward?
Yes, Mrs. White.
There's a boy out here who says he has an appointment with you.
A boy with an appointment? What boy?
It's I, Sir Edward.
George.
Well, come in here. Let him come in, Mrs. White. Now, young man, you say that you have an appointment with me?
Yes, sir.
Sir Edward, this is my son.
Aha.
I told him to come here half an hour later than I did.
Well, may I ask you all to leave my office?
That means you don't want to see me, sir?
It means that I do not want to see you, sir.
Come along, George.
I understand. Sorry, sir. But I suppose even you, Sir Edward, are afraid of tackling the whole British Empire.
Come along, George.
Boy, here. What makes you think that I'd be afraid to tackle the whole British Empire?
Oh, he didn't mean that, Sir Edward.
You shut up. Well, boy.
You wouldn't take my case, sir.
What has that got to do with the British Empire?
Well, the case is me against the British Empire, Sir Edward.
This?
Yes, sir.
Mrs. White.
Yes, Sir Edward.
You and this boy's father will kindly withdraw into the reception room. I want to talk to this young man.
Yes, sir.
What's your name?
George, sir.
Why must every Tom, Dick, and Harry be named George?
I don't know, Sir Edward.
What about this money you sold?
I didn't steal it.
Whose money was it that you didn't steal?
Terence Black's. He was a fellow student of mine, sir. He got a postal order from his parents and put it in his locker.
This was at school?
Yes, sir. When he went to his locker, he found the order missing, so he reported it. At the post office, they said the order had been cashed already. I'd been in the post office that day to cash a postal order of my own, and they blamed me.
What is all this rigmarole about the British Empire?
Well, I thought you knew about the school, sir.
What school was it?
The Royal Naval College at Osborne.
Ah.
That's where it happened. I was a cadet there.
A sector?
Yes, sir.
You're too young to be entitled to a court-martial.
Yes, sir.
At the same time, you don't have the rights of an ordinary citizen because you've been discharged from the Navy, right?
Yes, sir. That's it exactly, sir. And I'll never be able to bear arms for England, sir.
That's what hurts.
That's part of it, sir. But I don't want people to think I'm a thief anyway.
What has your father done about all this?
He went to the captain. The captain wouldn't even tell him why they thought I took the money. But after he argued a bit, the captain referred him to the Admiralty.
So he went to the Admiralty, and the Lords of the Admiralty said that His Majesty's Navy must be the sole judge of material suitable for making a British officer.
That's exactly what they said, sir.
So it is the case of a 13-year-old boy against the British Empire.
Yes, sir.
Now, let me tell you something, my boy. If I were convinced that you were telling the truth, I'd take the case. I'd take the case and fight the royal family itself if need be. You understand that, don't you?
Yes, sir.
And so much for your accusation that I'm afraid to tackle the British Empire. But I wouldn't take the case for that reason alone. There's a thing you said that I liked. You said that you wanted to regain the rights of a citizen so that perhaps you could fight for the crown that you're now fighting against. I like that. You know why?
No, sir.
Because England is one of the few countries that can produce men who are not afraid to stand up for their rights against the whole authority of governmental power. That's why. Don't you ever forget that.
No, sir.
Because you wanted to fight for England, I'd like to take the case. I can't.
Why not?
Because you're lying.
No.
You're guilty.
No.
You took the money.
No, I didn't. And I won't let you say it or the Admiralty say it or the King himself say it. I didn't take the money, and I'm not going to let them take away my rights when I'm innocent.
Calm down. It's fine. It's what I wanted to know. You didn't take the money, and I'm sure of it now. Now, come on, blow your nose. Let's go and tackle the British Empire.
But the boy took the money.
Rubbish.
Not at all, Sir Edward, not rubbish. The matter was gone into long ago, and it was decided that the boy took the money.
You changed your mind quickly, didn't you, Admiral?
What do you mean?
First you say the boy took the money, and then in the next breath you say it was decided that he took it. That's not at all the same thing, you know.
Oh, come now. The case against the boy is quite conclusive.
Is that so, sir?
Quite.
Would you outline the case against the boy for me, Admiral?
I can't, and you know it. Good heavens, Sir Edward. I am an admiral of the King's Navy. You think I have my mind cluttered with the details of such petty cases as this?
Of course, the case is not petty to the boy or to his father, but of course, you're quite right. You are an admiral, and you should leave such things to your subordinates, sir.
I'm glad you see it that way, Sir Edward.
Of course, but then it is true, too, that you are responsible for the mistakes of your subordinates.
What do you mean?
Nothing very much, sir, but it would be unfortunate, wouldn't it, if my investigations disclosed that your underlings were in error and you were blamed?
How can they be in error?
Perhaps they can't.
They investigated the case thoroughly. That much I do know.
They were doubtless quite impartial.
Oh, of course they were. There can't be any possibility of their being wrong.
Of course.
They are excellent officers. I chose them myself. They know their responsibilities.
I am sure they are infallible.
Then why did you suggest it? Very well. I'll order a full review of the case immediately.
Uh-huh.
To Sir Edward Carson, dear sir. The Lords Commissioners of the Admiralty desire me to inform you that in the case of George Arthur Sheed, the further inquiry has resulted in upholding the original decision. George Arthur Sheed stands convicted of conduct unbecoming a candidate for a commission in His Majesty's Navy. This is the end of the case. Yours, etc., etc., Rufus Isaacs, Baronet.
Have you read that letter, George?
Yes, sir.
You understand what it means?
It means I'll never get justice.
You think so? Well, you're wrong. It means that they've reviewed the case without allowing me to be present, and they've reviewed it without trying to get at the truth, but just in order to uphold their original action. It means that they've behaved like stuffy old nincompoops, and I'm going to stuff them further. Stuff them with their own words and stuff them with their own errors. Stuff them with their own stuffiness until they're so stuffed they'll spew forth apologies. Sir Edward Carson is angry, sir.
Charles Lawton will be back in just a moment with the second act of tonight's Hallmark drama from the pages of the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine. And now here's Dick Calmer.
You know, friends, all of us are pretty much like Sir Edward Carson in tonight's story. Remember, he couldn't be bothered with a small boy's petty troubles until he realized how important they really were. Well, that's the way most of us act in our everyday lives. We disregard the little things until something makes us realize how important little things really are. And we don't have to fight the whole British Empire, as Sir Edward agreed to do. No, we can pay just a little more attention to the days and dates that are so important to our friends and loved ones. With very little effort, just a little remembering, you can bring added happiness into those lives by showing them that their important days are important to you, too. One of the best and simplest ways to let them know that they're always in your mind and heart is to remember their days with an appropriate greeting card. Yes, a few minutes of your time each week spent in sending a Hallmark card or two can bring added happiness to your friends and loved ones. Whether you want to keep in touch with an old friend, to welcome a new baby, to wish someone a happy birthday, or remember any important date in the lives of your friends and loved ones, you'll find Hallmark cards that seem to be made just for you, that say what you want to say the way you want to say it. And remember how much more it means when you send a Hallmark card. Yes, a Hallmark card does mean more, because for over a third of a century, that phrase, a Hallmark card, has stood for finest quality. Like the word sterling on silver, those words, a Hallmark card, are your assurance of the very finest in greeting cards. It tells your friends you cared enough to send the very best. You will find Hallmark cards on display in America's finest shops and stores. So whenever you want to remember someone, stop in at your favorite Hallmark dealers. As Dick Calmer suggested, a few minutes spent in sending Hallmark cards can bring added happiness to your friends and loved ones.
Very well, then. The gold-braided officers of His Majesty's Navy weren't inclined to give in to a little 13-year-old boy. And since it was an Admiralty matter, we could apparently not get the case into court. But I had an idea. I went to Sir Rufus Isaacs, Solicitor General for the Admiralty.
You know, Sir Edward, you and these Archer She people made nuisances of yourselves.
I sincerely hope so.
Well, it's all over now. And I can't imagine why you came to see me.
Sir Rufus, do you realize that everybody in England is talking about this case? Do you know how many hundreds of letters are coming to the Times about it? The English people see in this little case the larger issue of the rights of the individual, sir. Why is the Admiralty so afraid of letting the facts be aired?
The Admiralty is not afraid of facts.
No, sir. Then it would logically seem that the Admiralty would not object to a trial.
But the Admiralty does object to that. This case can't come to court, and you know it.
So I am completely beaten.
Completely.
So be it.
I'm glad you're graceful about it.
Thank you.
I don't blame you for trying to bluff. I'd do the same in your position.
Of course you would.
We're both lawyers, hmm?
Yes, both lawyers.
Well, that reminds me, Sir Rufus, perhaps you can help me. After all, you know more law than anyone else I can think of.
Thank you. What the question?
What do you know about a petition of right?
Petition of right?
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's an antique device. If a subject approached the throne with a petition of right, and the king can send a right across it, let right be done.
Hmm?
His Majesty can, in that instance, and on that issue, be sued like any commoner. But never used any longer.
It could be, couldn't it?
Oh, yes.
It's going to be.
Really? In a case of yours? I'd love to know the details.
Know the details.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
What? You mean...
I perceive from the horror of your tone, sir, that you anticipate me. Yes, my dear Sir Rufus, and the Archer She case.
No, I won't permit it.
Haven't you stop it?
So, see here. The petition of right is an ancient and outworn legal device. You can't use it.
You just said that I could.
No.
Yes. What's more, the court has said that I might use it. I've just come from chambers straight to you, Sir Rufus, to inform you that the court has ordered an open trial to arrive at the facts that they might determine whether the petition of right applies.
Oh, no. Oh, no. That can't be.
Sir Rufus, I thought you weren't afraid of the facts.
The court will come to order. Gentlemen, we are here to determine whether a petition of right applies to the case of George Archer Shee, a former cadet dismissed from the Royal Naval College at Osborne. Sir Rufus Isaac is here for the Admiralty. Sir Edward Carson for Mr. Archer Shee. Gentlemen, you may state your cases and proceed with the calling of witnesses. Sir Rufus.
May it please the court, I have no case to state. Only one witness to call, really. If it be agreed by Sir Edward that there was a postal order stolen and that it was cash.
I agree, sir.
Thank you. Will Miss Anna Tucker please take the stand?
Yes, sir.
Miss Tucker, what is your work?
I'm chief postal clerk in the post office at Osborne.
On November the 8th, 1908, a postal order for 5 shillings in the name of Cadet Terence Back was cashed in your post office. Which clerk cashed it?
I did, sir.
Was it a cadet who presented that postal order to you?
Yes, sir.
We all know now that it was not presented by Cadet Terence Back, to whom the postal order was made out. Have you any way, Miss Tucker, of knowing just which cadet cashed the order?
Yes, sir.
Will you please tell the court about it?
Yes, sir. There were 2 cadets came to my window that day. One to buy a 15 and 6 penny postal order, the other to buy 2, totaling 14 and 9 pence. It was one of them who cashed the stolen order.
Which one?
The one who bought the postal order for 15 and 6.
And which one was that?
My records could answer that question.
You have your records here?
Yes, sir.
Would you read from them, please?
Yes, sir. Just a minute. Here it is. November 8, 1908. Postal order for 15 and 6. Issue to Cadet George Archer Shee.
Order, order. There it is, Your Honor. There is our case. One witness. Incontrovertible evidence. Carefully kept written records. Your witness, Sir Edward.
Thank you. Now, Miss Tucker, when the authorities at the Royal Naval College at Osborne questioned you, you told them exactly what you've told us here. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. And I showed them the records.
Yes, I see. And did they ask you to help in any further investigation?
Yes, sir.
Could you tell us about that?
Well, sir, they brought me to the college next morning.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed 6 or 7 of the cadets to me. And they asked me which one was the one that cashed the stolen postal order.
Could you tell?
Oh, no, sir. They all look so much alike, those boys in their uniforms, that I wouldn't know one from the other.
Did they ask your cooperation in any other way?
Yes, sir. They had several boys come into the room where I was, and they had each one of them say, I'd like to buy a postal order for 15 and 6. And they asked me which one of the boys sounded like the one who had cashed the stolen order the day before.
And could you tell them?
Oh, no, sir. They were all at the time of life when their voices were changing. And they all sounded just alike to me.
Order. Your Honor, I object to this line of questioning as being entirely too negative. The records of the post office remain and cannot be explained away.
I bow to my colleague, Your Honor. I shall question Miss Tucker only on the matter of the accuracy of her record.
That is perfectly agreeable to me.
Mm-hmm.
There can be no question as to the accuracy of those records. Go right ahead, Sir Edward.
Miss Tucker, the cashing of the stolen order and the issuing of the order for 15 and 6 took place at the same time?
Well, one transaction right after the other.
Your records show that?
No, but I remember.
Were you interrupted between the two transactions?
Of course. After all, I was in sole charge of the office at the time.
No, it was the telephone to answer.
Yes, sir.
Telegrams to take down as they came over the wire.
Yes, sir, and the mail to sort. Believe me, sir, clerking in a post office is not the cinch that some taxpayers think it is.
All these matters often took you away from the window.
Yes, sir.
Even into the back room?
Sometimes.
And of course, you've already told us that one cadet looks just like another to you.
Yes, sir.
So that if one cadet should go away from the window and another step into his place while you were sorting the mail or answering the telephone, you would not notice the substitution.
That's true, sir.
And in the instance we are talking about, one cadet could have taken the place of another without your realizing when you returned to the window that you had not been dealing with the same boy.
I never thought of it that way. But you're right, sir.
So now you cannot say that it was Archer Shee who cashed the stolen order.
Sir, you're absolutely right.
May it please the court, with this cross-examination, I rest my case. A boy, 13 years old, was labeled and ticketed and has since been labeled and ticketed for all his future to life as a thief and a forger. He has been absolutely deprived of the possibility of any future career, either in His Majesty's service or indeed in any other service. And now we find that the only witness against him has a gap in her story wide enough to drive a coach through. Strike me with questions that I have asked this woman might well have been asked by the Admiralty. Honorable. It strikes me that in not asking such questions, the officers of the Admiralty were criminally remiss in the performance of their duty. I demand restoration of all rights that George Archer Shee has been deprived of. I demand that he be allowed to return to the Royal Naval College if he pleases. And I demand, sir, that the British Empire apologize to this 13-year-old boy.
Well, well, George.
My father told me how the case came out, sir. I came to thank you.
So right, my boy, were you anxious?
No, sir. I knew that when the case got to court, the truth would come out.
Apparently, you didn't worry over your own case as much as I did, but you might be right, my boy. Now, you can see this for the English courts. They give you a hearing. They give you a trial, and the whole legal system in this country is organized with a view to getting at the truth. That's a mighty fine thing in the kind of world we live in, George. It's a mighty fine country that sets up such a court. And that's why you were very wise. The wise to fight. God bless you.
There's a true sequel to this true story. George Archer Shee did exercise his right to fight for England. He was killed in action in Ypres in 1915. Thank you, Charles Lawton, for bringing us a great story of liberty.
You know, Dick, liberty isn't the only ingredient in life. There are other things that go along with it. You know, I believe that you Americans have something to say about, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Indeed we have, Mr. Lawton. And there's something very interesting on that subject in a recent issue of Reader's Digest.
Oh, I remember that one. The piece points out that there was never a time when so much official effort was being expended to produce happiness, and probably never a time when so little attention was paid by the individual to creating the personal qualities that make for happiness.
Exactly. And of all those who've tried down through the ages to outline a program for happiness, few have succeeded so well as William Henry Channing, chaplain of the House of Representatives in the middle of the last century. He said,
To live content with small means. To seek elegance rather than luxury. And refinement rather than passion. To be worthy, not respectable. And wealthy, not rich. To study hard, think quietly, talk gently, act frankly. To listen to the stars and birds, to babes and sages with open heart. To bear all cheerfully, do all bravely. Await occasions, hurry never. In a word, to let the spiritual, unbidden and unconscious, grow up through the common.
Thank you again, Charles Law. This is Tom Shirley speaking for the makers of Hallmark greeting cards and reminding you that it takes only a few minutes to remember your friends with distinctive Hallmark greeting cards. Always be sure to look in the back of the card you choose for the identifying words, a Hallmark card. For over a third of a century, these words, a Hallmark card, have meant expert craftsmanship, excellence in greeting cards.
And for excellence in entertainment, ladies and gentlemen, you're cordially invited to be with us again next week at this same time for another outstanding dramatic program brought to you by the makers of Hallmark greeting cards, America's favorite greeting cards. We have a wonderful story for you, Doc Brackett by Damon Runyon, and a wonderful guy to play it, Pat O'Brien. May soon be seen in A Miracle Can Happen, a United Artists release. The Archer She case was dramatized by Robert Sanadella from Alexander Wolcott's story in the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine. The Hallmark program was directed by Mark Sloan, with music especially composed by Jack Miller. Remember, a Hallmark card will best express your perfect taste, your thoughtfulness.